Good morning. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Twanda Black, your host. And joining me this morning, Lynette Jackson. She's written this book called Hollow, When Everything That Means Anything Is Taken Away. And when I tell you, she is transparent in her journey, in her story. She's real transparent. How are you doing this morning, Lynette?
Good, Twanda. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
You're welcome. Tell us the story about Hollow. I want you to talk about the first thing, about in the first part of it, how you came to Hollow.
Well, Hollow is my journal, and it chronicles 18 months of, as I kind of describe it, as going to hell with some gasoline draws on. So that's kind of like a really bad situation to be in.
Oh, my gosh.
You're on your way down, and then you got some flammable accelerant on you. Because I went down really, really quick. It chronicles 18 months in which my mother was diagnosed with congestive heart failure.
No, you got to start with the Easter Bunny.
Okay. All right. I'll start with the Easter Bunny.
I want them to know why you said Hollow.
Okay. So the chocolate Easter Bunny. You know, when I was a kid, my dad used to bring us this chocolate Easter Bunny. He was a truck driver, and a lot of stuff fell off his truck, right? If you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
But one of the things used to fall off this truck all the time was this beautiful chocolate Easter Bunny, and we used to get it all the time. And my family and kids, you know, sisters and siblings and things like that, we would all sit around and eat this chocolate bunny. But I would be strategic at how I ate it because it was always hollow inside. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to just be eating the bunny and putting the broken bunny back in your basket. So I would be strategic. I'd eat the ears first. I eat the tail. I eat the feet. And I work my way to the hollow center, much like when I was putting this book together, trying to really explain the emptiness and feelings that I had after experiencing 18 months of tragedy, the bunny. And I realized that with each that took place in my life, I felt like life and people were eating pieces of me. Mm. They ate the ears, they ate the tail, they ate the feet. But when they got to the core, the center, the very essence of my being, and I crumbled, because you know it's hollow,
right.
Ain't nothing in it,
right.
It's going to crumble, they actually walked away. They had no more use for me.
Mm.
Which I feel a lot of people are feeling today. They're empty. They're just mocking time, going through the motions, and people are eating parts of their life. Life is eating part of
wow.
them, and there's just no empty. So we're beautiful on the outside. If you saw the cover mm-hmm. of the book, you know, the cover of the book has been called so many different things, you
it's
know.
Beautiful. You're beautiful here. You're
Thank
beautiful.
You.
Yeah.
And it's so all the makeup and the hair, it's so perfect. But on the inside was a very empty and a very hollow person. And I see it every day. I see it at work. And I especially see it at church all the time,
mm-hmm.
every Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The beauty, the nails, the most, you know, the clothing, as we were just talking about, and that we're so empty because we don't know how to process or fill ourselves. Or here's the thing, we try to fill ourselves with all of the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, I talk about how I try to fill myself with drugs, with alcohol, men, relationships, people-pleasing, and the only real filling comes from knowing and understanding, A, who God called you to be and what he placed you on this earth for, and then most importantly, how much he really loves me. That was the only thing that filled me
right.
when he told me that he loved me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now you can go back to what happened with your mom. Thank you.
Well, the whole, it's actually, like I said, my journal, mm-hmm. and it chronicles 18 months of tragedy. So my mom was diagnosed with congestive heart failure, and she asked me, the doctor said, take her home. She was 85, not much we can do for her. And she said, to me, she came to me, she goes, I want to live with you and I want to die with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what? Mom, please, child. I'm the youngest of seven children.
Mm-hmm.
We're very rank and file. I thought that was definitely for the older sisters to take care of mom and do that. And she said, I want to come and do this with you. So I took care of my mother for that year. And then the last 30 days of her life, I had to leave work and stay home and become a full-time caregiver
mm-hmm.
at home. And she died in my home. But the most amazing thing that she did in the interim and process, she made us plan her funeral, which completely stressed me out to no end. She's like, baby girl, it's time to write the obituary. And I'm going, first of all, you're not dying because you're too strong, you're too smart, you got all your faculties, but I'm not doing this right now. And then she'd say, it's time to pick out the coffin. So she did everything up until her death, and to what she was going to wear, how she wanted her hair done, and that with each moment of planning that she did with us, I was tanking. I was going down.
But that was such a loving thing for her to do.
It really was. I discovered who I was in the last 30 days of her life. So mm-hmm. I was born, and one of her favorite scriptures was, unless a corner of wheat fall to the ground and die, it abideth mm-hmm. alone. But mm-hmm. if it dies, it brings forth much right. fruit. And mm-hmm. she used to quote that to me all the time. And I'd say, you know, Mom, come on, please. She'd say, no, honey. I got to go so that you can live. This whole experience, you're going to be birthed. You're gonna really know who you are. And she was right. She was right. After she died, my mother left me power of attorney of my mentally ill sister, who was in an institution for paranoid schizophrenia in Pennsylvania. So I was dealing with trying to, you know, care for my sister from Georgia mm-hmm. up in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that I was going to take a job that you know, I needed to change. So I was offered a job with a huge ministry and in another state, and I took this job and moved my son and moved away, needed to get away from Atlanta, mm-hmm. and the ministry fired me in 4 months because they said I didn't fit in.
Oh, yeah, you were not a team player.
Yeah,
by
I did
any
not
stretch.
Fit in. You know, I just wasn't a team player, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, like, I have moved my whole life here. And my son, and now I don't fit in. And he actually said, can you go back home? They were very rude about the whole situation. So now I've lost my mother, who was my best friend. I've taken a job in another state, uprooted my entire life to only be rejected. Now the spirit of rejection has come in, mm-hmm. to be rejected by the church that says, you don't fit in. Shortly after that, my nephew was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver at the age of 36, and I was with him and my sister when he drew his last breath. And then that sister that I was had power of attorney over had to have knee surgery, and she died.
You know, that was a surprise.
Yeah,
that was a real surprise. Yeah,
mm-hmm. She died after 1 week.
Yeah.
I suffered severe depression, and in that depression, the biggest thing that I heard all the time was that I killed my sister. Because she said she did not want to have the surgery because she was afraid of waking up. But she had paranoid schizophrenia. So, and I convinced her that this was going to be good for you. She had really bad arthritis. They were getting a total knee replacement. But she contracted sepsis syndrome, toxic shock syndrome,
Jesus.
And she died.
But that had nothing to do with you.
I was like, huh? Yeah. And so I went. She had surgery on a Monday, and Friday I identified her at the Undertaker. And that was, I would say, the worst week of my life.
Because you heaped that on top of everything else.
Everything yeah. else. So with each, that goes back to the bunny. With each event, I felt like a piece of me was being taken away, mm-hmm. Which only left me empty. And when I would reach out to friends or who I thought were friends or even to some family members, the only thing that they could offer me was, girl, just pray. Just pray. And I'm like, yeah, but I can't even get out of the bed today.
Right.
Like, I can't even comb my hair. Depression is a real thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can't comb my hair. I can't get out of the bed. I can't do anything. The only thing that's bringing me some peace is these Percocets that I'm taking. And it's alcohol that I'm drinking.
As you called them, perky. I was tickled by that.
Perky. Those were my new friends. And listen, Mom gave me the Percocet.
Right, I saw that, yeah.
I got addicted to Percocet. I mean, she was in hospice, so it's just pain management.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really heavy, and I was lifting her and caring for her, and I pulled my back. And she says, well, this will help you. And I was like, yeah, but when I discovered how they made me feel, I said, well, I'll just, after the pain went away, I kept taking them because I hadn't slept. You know, mm-hmm. being on call in the mm-hmm. house with mm-hmm. your mother, you know, it's just, you just never sleep. Because in my mind, I was thinking, when will it be? You know, she slept in a room across the hall from me. Will it be today?
Right.
Right. Will I wake up and find her? Like, I didn't know how I was going to find my mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, is she going to try to go to the restroom? Is she going to try to fall? So you just, every little noise you heard, you woke up. You know, every morning when I woke up and I didn't hear her, I'm thinking, am I going to discover that she's gone away?
Yeah.
Is she gone? So you talking about paranoid?
Yeah. Yeah.
Paranoid. But the only thing that brought me a little bit of peace, which ain't good, because the only thing it gave me to Wanda was a bad hangover the next day.
And an escape. It was just an escape.
It was just an escape. Mm-hmm. Just an escape. Mm-hmm. So those were the things in 18 months that took place with me that made me really know and understand that, you know, I'm really empty. I was angry. I was angry with my mom because she left me. She's my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
I was angry at my family because I felt like as the youngest child, I should not have been burdened with the care of my mother, like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The care of my mother and then the care of my mentally ill sister, which was very taxing on me. And I was a single parent, one income. So it was very difficult to even process. And when I fell into depression, people said things like, oh, well, you know, she just, you know, depression just happened. But depression, Tawanda, doesn't just happen.
Mm-mm.
I liken depression into being a sinkhole. We see the hole and we say, oh, a sinkhole just happened. But a sinkhole doesn't just happen. It's the underlying resources.
It's developing, right.
Developing mm-hmm. through the process mm-hmm. that actually creates the erosion internally. And that's what was happening. I was dying and eroding on the inside. And when I broke, that's when you said, she's broken.
She's depressed. Did people tell you, oh, just get over it. Pick up yourself mm-hmm. and move on. Just get over it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just get over it. I was there with my mother when she died. I was with my nephew at 36 when he died. And then listen, I took my sister off life support.
Mm.
So I watched her flatline. And if you have never seen that or experienced that, it's a sound that I will never, ever forget in my life.
I have experienced that as well.
And mm-hmm. it's like the doctors, I was telling them, you fight for my sister. You fight for her. You fight for her. And they were saying, there's nothing else that we can do for her. And mm-hmm. I was so angry at the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finally said, okay, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. You take her off. But if she breathes on her own, I want you to fight for her, fight for her. And they were like, okay, Miss Jackson. They started unplugging her and my sister flatlined within 2 minutes.
As soon as they, yeah.
They mm-hmm. were. She wasn't even unhooked all the way
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With all the equipment before
she gone.
We started watching her heart drop mm-hmm. and things like that. And that was just like, am I being punked?
No.
Can this really be happening right now? So I was just so empty, which brought on more alcohol, which brought on more drugs, which, you know, I say to people when I go and speak and things like that, that I don't look like what I've been through.
Hallelujah for that.
Thank
because,
God for that.
And the other part of this is in the midst of all of that, then you began eating more.
Eating, girl.
The eating
now,
addiction.
I'm a good cook.
Yeah.
I'm a really good cook. And so I would, I remember my son would get up. He was 16, 17 during that time. And I'd get up with him and cook him breakfast before he'd go to school. And then as soon as he goes to school, I'd fry up, cook up anything I wanted to eat, take my bottle and go back upstairs. Tequila was my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go back upstairs in a bed and I would drink and sleep all day long and eat all day. I ate myself till I was 65 pounds overweight. And some people, when they're depressed, you know, they don't eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But some people eat.
Do eat.
I'm an eater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I get under stress, first thing I want to do is like, where's some ice cream?
Yeah, where's the comfort food?
Where's the comfort food, exactly?
Yeah. So what was your turning point? I mean, you guys, you got to read the book because it's an amazing, amazing story. And what was your turning point?
My turning point was when I was actually in my car on my way to go get some more alcohol. I remember the day that I tried to buy wine at Walmart at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me and said, you know, we can't sell you this wine. And I'm thinking, why not? You know, I need to have this wine so I can go home and
wait
chill.
A minute. Did you have still have on your pajamas and your house shoes?
Girl, I didn't have on my pajamas and my house shoes. I did say, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put on this little sweatpants here, you know, throw a hat on. But I'm trying to buy wine at Walmart at 8 o'clock. And they're like, sorry, miss, we cannot sell you this. You have to at least wait, look, until 12.
So
I was in my car one day, and one of the few times that I actually turned on the radio. And I was driving down the road, and a song by Dorinda Clark Cole came on. And it was talking about rescue praise. Mm-hmm. And I believe that woman sang in my own heart 15 minutes. I know it wasn't that long.
You know, it was 3 minutes and 45 seconds, something like that.
Exactly. But it kept going on and on. And the words were things like, you know, when I needed you, you were there. You came through every time. Mm-hmm. You rescued me, even when I didn't deserve it. And I was listening to this, and all of a sudden, I began to cry. And then she said, one of the things that she said, does anybody out there have a rescue praise? Mm. And I couldn't take it anymore. I actually began to cry. I pulled over on the side of the road, and for the first time, I realized I hadn't grieved.
Anything.
I hadn't grieved out of 18 months.
Yeah.
I hadn't cried because I was too busy working. Mm-hmm. I was burying people, cremating people, trying to get another job.
Right.
I just didn't have time. For the first time, I began to cry and I broke down. But as I began to break down and cry, I felt the presence of God in the car that was so uplifting. It began to fill me. As I was crying and eliminating the stress, I was getting filled.
No, you were surrendering.
Yes, girl.
And so that's the only way he can get to you.
That's the
at
only
that point,
way.
When you surrender. And when you were talking about bawling in that car, just wailing sort of, you surrendered it.
Girl, I let it go. And
yeah.
I mean, it was that ugly cry.
Yeah,
you know, that
yeah,
one that
yeah.
snot out your
mm-hmm,
nose.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
You just, it was hard. It was a hard cry. And I realized that I really haven't grieved. I really hadn't cried. So I was purifying and purging a lot of the junk that was on the
yes.
inside of me. And God began to really fill me. And the interesting thing is, he filled me with his love.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, he said, Lynette, because I contemplated suicide. I tried to figure out, when I left my sister identifying her body that day, I was up in Pennsylvania, and I decided on my way to the airport trying to fly back home, I said, you know, if I just throw my phone out the window, nobody will be able to find me, and I throw my ID out of another window, maybe another mile away, and then just run my car off the side of the road, nobody would find me. And they wouldn't identify and find my body for you know, that'd be just a DOA, you
mm-hmm.
know, some Jane Doe. And I decided, you know what, I don't know. Something kept telling me not to do it, and I couldn't go through it. And God spoke to me in a car that day, and he said, you know what, the reason why you couldn't do it, because I was there all the time. Because I said to him, where were you? Where were you in this 18 months of my life?
Hmm.
Like, I looked for you and I couldn't find you. I was mad at him.
Mm-hmm.
I just was
mm-hmm.
so mad at him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I was there all along. That's why you couldn't go through the things that you contemplated. I was there. But he said something so interesting to me. He said, you're going to regain entry into life, which I thought was the most fascinating thing that someone could say. So my mind thinks in pictures and metaphors, and I started thinking of the space shuttle. When a space shuttle goes out of orbit and it's in space, it's orbiting the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves at a slower pace. And really, they're watching life. You know, from space, you're watching all this life on Earth. And that's how I was. I was outside of myself, and I was just watching myself just mock. And he said, but you're going to regain entry into life. And when you do, you know, when the space shuttle comes back into the Earth orbit,
mm-hmm.
it comes back fast, and it comes back like fire.
Right.
And it burns off a lot of, I mean, of course, Apollo 13, the heat-seeking missiles, you know, the shields was one of the biggest reasons why it almost did not enter back into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're going to burn off toxicity. You're going to burn off bad relationships. You're going to burn off, you know, your bad eating habits. You're going to burn off this alcohol problem. You're going to burn off this drug problem. And you're going to regain entry in the life. And the only way you can do that is with my love and knowing that I will never leave you, never forsake you, even to the end of the earth. And I was like, Okay. Okay, I'll take it. But then he began to do something else to me. He began to open himself up and show me his attributes. And that's what really saved me. It really saved me because he showed me that my mother was a lover to my father, that my mother was a wife, she was a that she was a mother, she was a girlfriend, she was an aunt, but she was all the same person. She had different attributes. And he said, "When you need water, I'll be water. When you need a friend, I'll be a friend. When you need shade, I'll be shade." And he began to just open himself up to show me how awesome his love is. And he said, "I want you to just tell people I don't hate them. I love them. If they just get to know me and understand me, the different attributes of who I am, and to be able to rely on those different attributes, they'll get to know who I am." And so I said, "Okay, I'll do it." So I began to really kind of reinvent myself. Decided to do a lot of things, and one of the things I decided to do was to had a bright idea to take a scuba diving lesson.
Oh my gosh, I love this part of the book. It was fascinating. You got to do some things. I mean, when you talk about pulling up, you pulled up. Oh my
I
gosh.
pulled up and I had this bright idea that, oh, I think I'm going to take scuba diving lessons because I did have a fear of deep water. And the craziest thing was is that I didn't know how to swim. So how do you take scuba diving lessons and you don't know how to swim? But I just figure if I had the tank on, you know, I'm from Philly, from the ghetto. I just figure if I had the tank on and I had, you know, air, I'd be okay. I could just float through the water and see all the fish and things like that. I had no idea the physical, mental task that was going to be put on me going through this scuba course. And I passed scuba, but I failed swimming 4 times.
But it's okay because you got certified. You went
I
to
got
Bimini.
certified.
You got certified in the ocean, what,
In
75
the
feet down.
ocean.
It
Yes,
was amazing. And
it's an
then
amazing
at the
thing.
end, did you get your pilot's license?
I haven't got my pilot's license yet. You have read the book. You are so awesome. I haven't, but you know, I love that part of the stories because you never know who you're going to talk to. You
Never.
never know who you're going to meet. You never know. The Bible even tells you in Habakkuk to write the vision and make it plain to
That's
those
right.
who see it will run with it. I believe that those who see it are those that could underwrite that vision for you financially,
That's right.
emotionally, economically. And you need to be able to enthusiastically share the vision. You know, and so I sat down. I was in Carrabba's one day, just deciding to get myself something to eat. And I was doing a takeout, and this gentleman, who I would have never thought was a pilot, owned his own, he just didn't look the part at all, sat next to me and started talking to me. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm just really not feeling it right now. I just want to get my food. I don't want to talk to nobody. You know how we get. Get my food, don't want to talk to nobody, and just move on about my business. And he just kept talking to me. So I finally said, okay, I'll talk to him. He mentioned something about my phone, and he started asking questions. So I started sharing the book with him and sharing, at that point, I was writing the book, and I was sharing it with him. He said, "You're so fascinating, Lynette. You've done so many great things. You scuba dive and all this great stuff." He said, "Well, what do you want to do next?" I said, "Listen, don't laugh at me. Don't laugh at me. I want to fly an airplane." And he said, "You want to do what?" I said, I said, "Don't laugh. I want to fly an airplane." And he said, well, why?" I said, "Because, you know, I've always was curious as to what the pilot sees. Of course, there's no, you know, it's all run by GPS, but there's no stop signs and no signs up there. You know, I was like, I just really want to see what the pilot sees up in the sky, in the clouds." And he goes, "Wow, that's fascinating. Never heard anybody say it like that." But he goes, "This is your lucky day." I said, his name is Dave. I said, "Well, why, Dave?" He said, "Because not only am I a pilot, I'm a flight instructor. I own my own plane, and I'll take you up."
Wow.
So 1 week to the day, I logged my first flight hour, and I'm still taking lessons, but I have not gotten my license yet, but that's something on my list to do. I don't have a bucket list. I do have a life list.
Right, right, a life list. We're not ready for the bucket list yet.
We're not ready for the bucket
no.
list, but I think that, you know, when you realize you have to have a dream. And so many times we give our dreams away, you know, or we even talk our own selves out of our dreams.
Or we take them to the grave with us.
And we take them to the grave.
Yeah.
Miles Monroe said that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That the graveyard is rich and full of books never written and songs never produced.
Ideas,
and ideas that are in the graveyard. Mm-hmm. And I just decided, you know, people try to talk me out of this. Who cares about your story? And who cares about what you've done? And who cares that you were empty? I'm empty, too. And I said to God, I said, I will write this book on one condition. I love how you give him conditions, right? Mm-hmm. I said, I'll do this under one condition. If it changes the life of one person.
Just one.
Just one. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll put my business on Front Street because I talk about a lot of stuff like relationships and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I'll put my business on, this is my journal, my diary, my inner thoughts. I will put them, my fears, I'll put it on Front Street if it changed the life of one person. He says, good, we'll write the book because it changed the life of one person. It changed you.
Exactly.
Because I got delivered
done.
While writing my own book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, tell people how they can get your book and learn more about you.
Well, I have a website. I'm on Facebook, of course. Lynette Jackson's my name. Lynette.tv, www.lynette.tv is my website. I also have a website for the book, which is followhollow.com. And I'm on Facebook, Hollow, a Must Read Book by Lynette Jackson, and Lynette TV out on Facebook. So Lynette TV is just a web series that I've done out there just of motivation and encouragement to people. And then, of course, you can go out and find out a lot more about the book on Hollow, followhollow.com.
All right. Lynette Jackson, Hollow, and Everything That Means Anything is Taken Away. Fantastic read. It will take you less than a day, depending on your time.
Mm-hmm.
So great book. And thank you so much for sharing your testimony with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you.